One. Get into the minds of the most influential and successful creatives on the planet. From EDM record labels,
club owners,
EDM event producers,
music industry lawyers,
managers,
EDM recording artists,
and key industry leaders.
Get into the minds.
They are all part of the story
when the DJ
takes the stage. They push more than buttons. For everything you need to know about the EDM dance music scene, you need this podcast right now. Welcome to the Mastermind of a DJ podcast, hosted by Naughty Natalia.
It's so awesome to be able to say that we're about to ride into episode number 8 of the Mastermind of a DJ podcast, which is brought to you by the powerhouse of EDM adult entertainment nightclub experiences, Vixen's Cabaret in Davie, Florida. It's yours truly, Naughty Natalia. So what do you get when you combine a professional volleyball player hiding a deep but not dark secret in his garage for about 8 years? Yeah, I know it sounds like I'm about to narrate some, true crime podcast, but obviously I am not. Holding the hidden talent of DJing for 8 years is a crime in itself, and the story of my next guest is pretty incredible. Especially if you're an up-and-coming club promoter or manager, this episode is really one you gotta listen to because it'll give you some insight into your business. Now, his resume spans the globe, being voted San Diego's best EDM DJ, where he has been the conductor of groovy dance floors for over 20 years. He's inspired by the legendary Donald Glaude as he has developed a deep appreciation and love for his craft. A self-taught DJ and producer with musical talents have grown into powerhouse performances on the main stages of Coachella, Winter Music Conference, and Groove Cruise, just to name a few. So when I got word that he was going to be performing at Vixen's Cabaret for the Cruise Control Tour for Groove Cruise, and this is back in September, you better believe I stopped everything that I was doing and take this guy out to dinner, sauce him up, and do this interview. Needless to say, we had a lot of fun doing it. Let's get into the mind of Louvel Dupree.
What a fantastic evening we've had so far.
Oh, definitely.
Huh?
Food was great. Company was great.
Thank you.
Conversation was awesome. Absolutely.
Yeah. So tonight we're doing this. You know, he's about to go on at Vixen's Cabaret. Totally excited about that because you're part of the whole Cruise Control Tour.
Yeah, Groove Cruise.
Right? Spreading the gospel tonight is what you're going to be doing.
Absolutely.
And you flew in earlier today from San Diego. Right?
Yes. Awesome. That's where I live.
Yeah. So far, you've been dropping some truth bombs, and that's why I'm like, and I hope I didn't rush you on dinner tonight.
No, not at all.
I got to get to know. Wait, hold, you're dropping some truth bombs. Oh, and I'm like vibing. I'm like, hashtag truth on everything that you're saying.
Thank you.
And so tonight, as we get into the Mastermind of a DJ podcast, you understand why you're here. And it's not just for your music. Everyone knows who you are for your music,
Louvel. I mean, thank you.
Yeah. Well, no, and that's success.
Absolutely.
You let the results speak.
True.
Right?
Yes, absolutely.
So let's talk about Louvel Dupree.
Okay.
And let's talk about the man behind the decks.
The man behind the decks.
Right.
What would you like to know?
I would like to know, first of all, give me an idea of your background.
I was born in Tacoma, which is like 20 minutes outside of Seattle. So I usually just say Seattle because most people don't know where Tacoma is. Mm. So I was born in Washington. I was there until I was, I don't know, like 18.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I got out of there, moved to San Diego to go to school for a year, and then already finished 1 year of school before I moved out there, went to go to school for a year and play volleyball at Grossmont College.
Oh, cool.
Which was very interesting how I got there because I was playing beach volleyball, and I was playing a tournament in Oregon. And then this guy, Alan Allen, who was on the national team, saw me play and he just comes up to me, he goes, "You're a really good athlete. And I see that you got, you know, a lot of potential, but you're really raw. You don't look like anybody's ever coached you." And I was like, "No."
Hmm.
And he's like, "Well, come stay on my couch. I'll give you a place to stay and I'll take you to these colleges and get you a tryout."
What?
So yeah, that's how I got there. So I mean, I had this guy that was on the national team taking me up and down the coast of Southern California.
Wow.
Getting me tryouts. And then I met this coach, Featherstone. And he just was like my guy, you know, like I loved his attitude. You know, I decided I wanted to go there, which happened to be in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
Which made it easier. So I went there for a year. And then I went back to Washington State and finished up my schooling there.
What were you majoring in?
Psychology and philosophy.
Really?
Yeah, major in psychology and a minor in philosophy.
Oh, wow.
So finished that up there. And then after that, I went back to California to play professional beach volleyball.
Oh, wow.
So I did that from like 94 to like 99.
What was it about volleyball for you?
I don't know. I mean, I've always been an athlete. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always been in sports all of my life.
Usually at this point of the podcast, the majority of the guests have already shared a part of their adolescence, which includes the discovery of vinyl or radio mix shows that made an impact in their lives that led them on their musical journey. But in this case, Lavelle's journey was leading him into becoming a professional athlete. He did go on to share more about his life in college and the other sports that he mastered, like soccer and water polo, and was about to make it into the Olympic swimming team until
I was 7/10 of a second off Olympic trial time in the 200-meter breaststroke, but I didn't try out.
I'm a 2-time Olympic triathlete.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, I am. Right, that's where we have, we relate. We're both competitive. Get it. Right. Yeah. So keep going. That's why I'm like so motivated right now.
Pretty much my senior year, I was like, had senior nationals, and I just realized the only reason I was doing this is because I'd never really done anything where I was the worst. Hmm. And like by far I was the worst. And like, I mean, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. Hmm. We end up having like this, you know, one of the nation's best swim teams, unbeknownst to me or anyone in the school. They got no credit. And I stepped onto this team because I was playing water polo, getting in shape for wrestling because my uncle was an all-state wrestler. Mm-hmm. And then just, you know, decided I didn't want to wrestle because I was the worst guy in the pool. And I couldn't live with that. And
yeah.
So then I just started training my butt off all through high school. Got a couple of scholarship offers and came home from senior nationals and told my mom that I don't love swimming. I was just doing it because I sucked at it, really. And she was like, what the heck?
What?
Are you serious? And so she's like, yeah, I have all these scholarships on the table. I was like, yeah, I really don't. You know, I don't love it. I don't want to sign a paper and have to do this and train even harder for another 4 more years. So being the great mom that she is, I mean, I throw a lot of curveballs at her and she's just like, okay, well, that's your choice, you know? Right. So, you know, you don't have to do that, but you got to do something. And I was like, yeah, I've been playing volleyball which was one of my best friends that I grew up. His dad was my soccer coach. And so I was like, yeah, I've been playing volleyball with him. And so she's like, all right, well, at least all this time he spent, he's going to at least be able to go to college for free. And then I backed out of that.
Really?
And then I happened to be playing volleyball. And, you know, I was always playing basketball. And for some reason, basketball and volleyball translate really well. Mm-hmm. And so then I started doing that and then fell in love with it. I started chasing it, was doing local stuff, local professional tournaments. And that's how I met Allen. And, you know, he changed my life and brought me to San Diego. And, you know, I left there, but I knew I wanted to come back. And so I came back and then did that till 99. And then the tour went bankrupt. And I was like, well, what else do I love to do?
So all throughout the 90s, Lavelle had lived on this competitive edge in sports, where his love for professional beach volleyball blossomed. However, he was holding a deep, dark secret that has been with him for over 8 years.
I have been DJing since 1990, you know, and like...
Okay, wait. So let's backtrack here. Hold on. So you have been doing volleyball.
Doing volleyball.
With all these tournaments, and you're following your passion with that, but in the background...
is music, and I've always loved it. You know, I've always loved the music. And it's like, I played the drums, but I wouldn't say I'm a drummer. You know, I can hold a good drum kit, you know, but I'm not a drummer, but I can, you know.
Yeah.
And so, but what really got me into it is because I was dancing. I used to break dance for Pepsi when I was like 14. And so like my buddy started throwing parties in the 90s. It was like the first music. I was like, man, this just doesn't stop. It's like, I can't outdance this. This just keeps going and going and going. It's like, I never heard of music. I just keeps, it's just relentless. It's just music. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it was so good, but it was so relentless. And so I fell in love with it that way. And so then, you know, he would do the parties. And back in the 90s, no DJs were staying in hotels.
No.
They were staying at the promoter's house. So the promoter would have the DJ stay in there. He'd throw the party. They'd come back and listen to music. When they fall asleep, I would like still be up. So I would want to listen to music. Mm-hmm. So then I was like, I guess I got to play it since everyone else is asleep. So then that was kind of my first introduction to like DJing. But I wasn't really like serious about, you know, the craft.
Yeah.
You know, I was like just, you know, doing that and playing. And then eventually I was explaining to you earlier, I went to a party of his and there was 8 hours of unbelievable music from the first DJ to the last DJ.
Wow.
Just murdered it. And like watching the people's expressions, watching people not know what to do with themselves, like just like
unexplained
in pleasure.
Yeah.
But awkwardly, you know, pleased. I was like, what the hell? Like, you know, and I was right there with them. So I was like, man, dude, this like no one has played like a bad song. Like and not even a bad song. No one has not played a great song. Like, it was just so overwhelming. Mm. And that's when I was like, all right, I want to really learn what the heck's going on here. I want to do this.
And this was all dance music.
This is all dance music. Yeah. And so.
Wow.
I started, you know, practicing harder, never practicing harder going, oh, I want to DJ at a party. I just wanted to be like, I just wanted to learn more about it. So yeah, I mean, I DJed 8 years before I DJed in front of anybody.
Wow. 8 years.
8 years before I played for anybody besides like my friends, you know, that would come to my house, yeah, you know, and like my ex-wife, like mm-hmm. even before any of them heard anything, that's what they would hear. You know, I would go and play a tournament, lose, and then go and lock myself in my garage where I had my decks for like hours until I decided that I wanted to just, you know, it was therapeutic, you know?
Okay, so this is pivotal. This is pivotal because it, you know, music is now being used in therapy for rehab. Music, right. Music is what feelings sound like. It's the universal law. You can take yourself out of a mental state that can be so compromising.
Yeah.
And put yourself in a mental state of pleasure and freedom.
For sure.
And how did you know to go get turntables? How did you know to get a mixer? How did you learn that process of DJing?
Well, I mean, I'd been around it with my friends. So like, you know, I'd already seen the setup, what it was like, even though my setup was nothing like his. Mm-hmm. Like my very first setup was like a realistic mixer with two belt driven turntables, but not like Newmark. I'm talking about like twisty knob.
Yeah.
Like little knobs. That was the 40 to 45.
45s.
Yes. And like 30, was it 33? Like,
yeah,
that's little knobs, not actual like pitch.
Yeah.
So that was my first. And like literally like shout outs to George Acosta. I put a hole into Planet Soul.
Yeah.
That record, like to this day, I still have it and it will skip because I played it so much because it was one of my first records. And, you know, that was like my own personal first setup that I had back like 93.
In 1993 in your garage. And how did you know how to set that up? So you asked friends?
No, I asked friends and I already known from like, you know, like from, you know, my buddy throwing the parties.
Yeah. Oh,
on how
that's
to
right.
set it up. Mm-hmm. You know, he had always, when I was learning at his house, he had a really nice, you know, 1200, mm-hmm. you know, all the nice stuff. So like, you know, I knew my way around it. Mm-hmm. I know how to set it up, but I never had my own. Like when I was in the 90s practicing, I would be over at his house all the time playing. It was kind of ironic because it's like, I used to think that like, man, this is like one of the hardest things on the planet to do because he would mix and he was like, you know, he wasn't that good. And he'd been playing for a while. And like these guys he'd bring in, these pros, would be flawless. And I'm like, man, how long does it take to get from where you're at to where they're at? Because you've been doing this for a year and you still suck. And like these guys are like flawless. So this must be like unbelievable.
Yeah.
And, you know, on a side note, what I'd found out, you know, especially after teaching a few people, is that in the beginning when you start DJing, like when the record's on, the hardest thing to recognize is which record is going which speed, you know what I mean? Like, because it just blends together.
Right.
But within like a month to a 3 month period, if your mind doesn't be able to, mm-hmm. you know, tell the difference between the two,
right,
then this isn't for you.
Huh.
And that's what I found out with my buddy. His mind couldn't tell the difference because within like months I was better than him.
Wow.
And he was there for years. And I was like, man, I thought I was in a long, you know, 2 year journey before I was ever be able to, you know, mix flawless. So that's what I had found out that I always tell people now. I'm like, this is not for everybody. Most people it is, but some people just
don't have the ear.
They just can't separate the music's moving exactly right on top of each other at the same speed. They just have a problem with that.
And that's what the sync button is for, right?
Yeah, I guess. The sync button to me is like playing a guitar that plays all the music and you just hold it and stand on stage. And it's like,
I
think he's a guitar player. Like, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
You know,
I guess he's a good guitar player.
He has a guitar.
So here you are. You're in that stage of development. You're creating this talent, out of complete, utter passion.
Yeah.
No one's paying you for it.
No.
But here you are. You're performing in another area and you're succeeding in that.
Yeah. It's like a guitar. You know, so many people are really good guitar players that aren't professional guitar players. I never, ever, ever once thought that I would want to be a professional DJ. It was never even the reason why I was doing it. It was not like where I am now wasn't mm-hmm. like, you know, wasn't a thought, mm-hmm. you know, oh, maybe I'll do this. Mm-hmm. It was like, no, never mm-hmm. even like thought of it until the tour that I was on mm-hmm. went bankrupt.
Right.
And I was like, well, what else do I love to do? I was like, oh, I love to DJ.
Right.
And then, you know, my ex-wife had this poem that she gave me that mm-hmm. really inspired me. And it said, when I meet God, I hope to say I'm completely talentless. So I say I used everything you gave me. And mm-hmm. she's like, you're talented in this, but you're not being a part of the movement,
yeah.
you know, a part of the growth of the history of it. Because mm-hmm. you're just sitting in your garage playing for yourself. Mm-hmm. So I made a mixtape.
How did that go?
I mean, it went. I mean, I was a.
How did you record that? The mixtape from vinyl to the mixtape. Come on.
I don't know now. I mean, it was so long ago. I know I had the equipment to do it. It wasn't that hard to do. Uh-huh. You know, like, I mean, I probably just had a receiver that, you know what I mean, where everything was running through that I could record a tape on.
Well,
and
the reason why I want to know the steps that you went through is because in today's day and age, right? So you have a lot of these DJs who now have the MP3 player, all that stuff, right? Yeah. Really super easy stuff digitally that we can just get from Dropbox and however we download our music however we do it in Rekordbox, whatever it is that we do.
Yeah.
But at that time, just to create your own mixtape. That was a process because it went onto a cassette tape, and you better do this in one tape.
Yeah. There was you could re-record it, but you still had
to go through the whole thing again.
You still have to knock it out. Yeah, you had to be on your shit.
Yeah,
you know? And so I made that, and it was I made a mixtape for a buddy of mine that started throwing a party on a Monday night in PB. It was called Blind Melons. And the party's called Candy Bar, and I made him the mixtape, and I got the job, and it was like for $25. It was my first gig that I got.
$25
for first gig on a Monday night. And that was when I found out I was a way better DJ than I was a volleyball player.
How did it feel to get that $25?
I mean, it just felt just awesome just playing. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, you know.
It was liberating because now you were in your garage for 8 years.
Yeah.
Playing for yourself just for the pure love of dance music.
Yeah.
And then here you are after the quote that you got, right?
Yeah.
Which kind of like was...
Step me out to be like, you know, be a part of this.
Be a part of the
movement. Instead of just being like, you know, behind the scenes or in the garage or, you know, not contributing to like, you know, the growth of it, you know? So, yeah. And that changed my life. And that's really what I found out.
Yeah. That's what you wanted to do for the rest of your life. That was your purpose.
That was my purpose. That was my form of expression for, like, you know, my mindset.
I'm still blown away on how Lavelle used his failures from losing volleyball games and turning to music to ease his pain from those failures. Now, little did he know that by all of that practice in his garage for 8 years, along with a little encouragement from a poem, would change the trajectory of his life forever. He might have only made $25 his first gig, but you have to start somewhere, don't you? So after the break, we're going to find out how he turned that $25 into an abundant DJ business, landing him performances at festivals and venues around the world, like Groove Cruise and Coachella. Stay with us.
Get into the minds. Mastermind of a DJ podcast. With Nani Natalia, we'll return after this.
Vixen's Cabaret is leading the way in creating unforgettable nightclub experiences in the Broward County area. Only minutes from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino and downtown Fort Lauderdale at 3050 Burris Road, Davie, Florida, baby. That's where you gotta be. It's Naughty to tell you. And at Vixen's Cabaret, they have broken the barrier. Better yet, broken the stigma of adult entertainment by booking some of the biggest names in the EDM industry. From Marcus Schultz, Damaged Goods, Lavelle Dupree, Mr. Gray, DJ Zog, DJ Laz, and so much more. And when you walk in, look up and get taken away by the jaw-dropping live aerial acrobatic entertainment provided by the Sexy Circus. Get lit up by the live fire shows and more while listening to your favorite EDM beats. It's truly an unforgettable nightclub experience, hands down. Now, their event schedule is massive, like on December 3rd and 4th. We have DJ Mr. Gray providing the beats for their two-day launch event, introducing their Sexy Circus, and later in December, they have booked a DJ so massive, I was sworn to secrecy. The good thing is, I get to interview that DJ on my show, so we'll keep you posted. In the meantime, listen to the end of the podcast to find out who the next big name DJ will be performing at Vixen's Cabaret.
Welcome back to the Mastermind of a DJ podcast with your host, Naughty Natalia.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. So obviously no one can live off of $25 a gig, right?
No. I definitely had a job.
Yeah.
One of my jobs was, I was a security guard for a very brief moment, you know? That's what I did in between the volleyball and the DJing. I was a security guard, and that lasted for about a year maybe or so. And then, you know, the music just kind of really picked up really fast, yeah. And started working like 2000. I had a residency me and Scooter had a residency in Vegas at the Hard Rock at the club called Babies.
Really?
Yeah.
And how were you able to get that?
We were both working on that Monday night, and then he brought in four turntables to play by himself because the night went hip hop and then into house. And then I was playing and he rolled up and started scratching all over my house music. And I was like, dude, this is dope. We should do this. And then like we did it once and it was really cool. And then the promotion company that we were working with, they got hired to do a bigger club on a Saturday. So we're going to stop the Monday. And they were like, we need to do something cool to finish this off. So we did the 2x4 thing that we did. And one of the biggest like dance promoter companies that were in San Diego heard about first time we did it, send one of their guys out to listen to us, heard us and goes, we want to book you at our night, which was like the biggest dance night in San Diego. And we want to manage you guys.
Wow.
And we're like, we're not even a thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's like, so we had to become a thing real quick.
Right.
And so that's where we were first. We were LSDJs. Lavelle Scooter DJs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then we had to change that years later. We got a tour with Camel.
Oh,
wow. We got like a 68-day, 34-show tour. Every other day we did a show.
What?
And they're like, we really want these guys, but their name LSD, LSDJ, sounds like LSD. And we're like, all right, what are we going to do? So then we just flipped it.
Yeah.
And now we're a Scooter and Lavelle. So then that's how Scooter and Lavelle came about.
And there you go. All right. So you had your first security guard job. And then that just, you know, as you continued on, you kept going, getting paid or not at gigs. Because that's the thing. Up and coming DJs and those that are coming up in this industry, you're playing for empty rooms.
Yeah, for sure. And you're proving yourself.
Exactly. You know? And even if there's only two people in the room, what you do is you go and you put on the best that you can, even if you, for those, you know, up and coming DJs that are listening to this podcast right now, you're sitting in your bedroom, you're trying to figure out who you are as an identity because there's so many DJs.
Yeah.
But the goal is to be able to face yourself. And I feel facing yourself is facing an empty room and perfecting your craft.
Exactly. Playing an empty room, but honestly knowing that, I mean, that's your job, but what you're really playing for is a promoter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you're playing so that guy, because back when I was started out, like the promoters had the power. Wherever the DJ, whatever promoter threw the party, no matter who was DJing, it was packed.
Right.
So it was like the DJs just wanted to play at the packed party. So you want to play for the promoter. So it's like the party would go off if everybody knew the DJ's name or not, because everybody trusted the promoter. He knew good music. He knew the dope DJs that were coming up, you know? And so it was like, you know, you just got to get in that room. So when you went on, you know, even though there was nobody, you knew this guy that booked you knew about music.
Right.
So if he heard you play really good music, then he would give you an opportunity. And it was a lot easier being a nobody then and getting up playing in front of a packed room than it is now, because now it's all about who's playing. You know, you can go to one club now.
Very good
and
point.
One night and it's slam packed.
Yeah.
And then another night it's dead.
Right.
Because it's all artist driven now.
Right.
It's not promoter driven. You know, promoters kind of lost that power and gave it to the DJs. And now all they're kind of concerned with is, all right, will that guy sell? Will that guy not sell? And even on the opener now, the opener's like, will you bring, you know, like not, oh, how good does this opener sound? Well, will you bring 50 people? Is he going to bring 100 people? You know what I mean? So it's like what you will bring to the table, not as much as like how good you are at what you do, because the promoter will bring them people to the table because that's what they did back then.
So, and it's important now for DJs and producers, you know, singers and songwriters to now kind of take a look at themselves. I believe, look, you know, if you're good at your craft, no matter an empty room or a packed room, you know, the goal is to maintain your brand.
Yeah, very true.
Okay. So, you know, it's understanding how to monetize your brand. And as you and Scooter, you know, you guys are growing together in this industry. You're now in the, I would say, the helix, right? So now here you are, you're finding your identity and you're like, wait a minute. I can make a lot of money doing what it is that I love to do.
Yeah.
And that's a powerful place to be.
Yeah. At the beginning, it was more like, I can make enough money. I don't have to do anything else.
Yeah.
That's how we first looked at it.
Yeah.
Like, I can end with this, then I don't have to do anything else. And then as you started, you know, we started getting a little bigger, started getting around other DJs. You start recognizing, you know, there is a lot of money out there. Even from the beginning, you know, with dance music, it's made more money than any other DJ, because dance music has got, not only are they, it's like their artists and their vehicle of performing is on the decks.
Yes.
Because they're making the music as well as you know, performing and playing other people's music.
Right.
So it's not just a guy that just DJing and he doesn't have anything to do. Mm-hmm. He has no stake in, you know, the sounds and the songs that are involved. Back in the day, Sasha and Digweed were making $60,000, the late 90s,
yeah,
you know, mid 90s. And there was nobody making that kind of money.
No.
You know, because they weren't just considered to be DJs. They were artists as well.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was kind of a really driving point, really helped dance music, you know, separate themselves as DJs from other DJs.
You know, I have an old writer agreement from Ultra with Paul Van Dyke.
Mm-hmm.
And we paid him, I think it was like $5,000. And that was like the most that we paid a DJ at the time.
Right.
You yeah. know, I'm like, I'm planning on taking out an NFT on all that because I have all the original documents. It's pretty crazy. So now it's like, but now here you're talking about Sasha and Digweed making $60,000. And then,
right.
and now, you know, there's other DJs as well that yeah. now are in that.
Well, yeah, now know. They're making like $500,000, you know, like,
right.
you know, they're making like crazy amounts of money, you know, it's mm-hmm. definitely gotten more commercialized, which allows them to have a broader, you know, reach, mm-hmm. you know, because now, you know, with all the vehicles that are out there to get music, you know, you can blow up your song can go viral or blow up faster.
Right.
Now more than ever, you know, mm-hmm. before it's like, you know, pretty much you were just blowing up because of the DJ. DJs would buy your record. They would play it. And then, you know, you would be like, oh, your manager right. would hit up that promoter and then he would talk to his resident.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, yeah, I play four of their songs. And
yeah.
you're like, oh, really? And because it was like, you know, for a majority, people didn't even know what songs you're playing.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't about the songs you're playing. It was about the symphony of sound.
Yeah.
You know, it was about the set, mm-hmm. the story.
I love
so
that.
So people never really, it was like, oh, who's this? Who is this song? The only person that would ask you that were other DJs.
Right.
You know, so it went from the music being just bought from just other DJs mm-hmm. to now everybody on the dance floor is buying the music.
I mean, that's incredible. Yeah. I mean, you know, and again, it's trusting your brand and evolving within the brand.
Yes.
And a lot of these DJs don't understand how to, they let their egos get in the way. And we talked about this over right. dinner. They let their egos get in the way of their evolvement.
Yeah, for
right?
sure.
Right. And then they get stuck in a sound.
Yeah.
And you're like,
yeah, they don't move on with
they don't move on
with the music. And the music doesn't care if you don't move on with it. It just leaves you.
It does. Ooh.
You know? It's just it's going to progress with or without you. Mm. It's going to survive with or without you. You know, especially now where it's like there's so many people out there. It's like, you know, no one's going to be, oh, where'd so-and-so go?
Mm-hmm.
There's like 10 people that are going to fill the void that are going to, you know, captivate their attention that they're just not going to think about you. Out of sight, out of mind.
Out of sight, out of mind. So when you realize you had this calling and what you are successful in now, I mean, you had to have those moments where you're like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. Did you ever have those vulnerable moments where you sat back and you're like, fuck this shit. I'm done. I'm done DJing. I'm done being this person for you guys. I'm out.
No, I've always, I mean, I've been vulnerable. Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
But I've never been like, you know, oh, I'm over this. I don't want to do this anymore because I'm like, I try to keep things in perspective. No matter what bullshit I got to deal with, there's a guy that I'm playing for that had to do it nine times that and no one's happy to see him when he showed up to work. He's sitting in a cubicle. He's getting shit. You know what I mean? He comes out. He's got like, you know, $100
right.
he can spend and he spent 50 of that to get in to see my show. You know, I'm like, and I'm going to bitch about the things I got to go through as a DJ.
That's very humble.
Like, yeah, I mean, like, just keep it real. You know what I mean? Like, no matter what I got to go through, it's minimal to what anyone else is going through. Just for the mere fact that what I'm going through is I'm going through something that I love. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Just that alone.
I felt that.
Makes it so much, you know, more humbling that you're like, look, you know, get over yourself. I mean, don't get me wrong. You like anything, you know, you could take it for granted or it can become like, you know, overwhelming, but I've never allowed myself to get to the point where I was like, fuck this, man. I don't want to do this again. You know, and I've had some things where I thought things were going to go one way and it didn't. You know, that hurt my feelings. They were devastating, mm-hmm. not in the sense like, you know, make you want to quit, but in the sense like, man, I really wanted that.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm going to have to figure out how I'm going to get to where I want to get to without that. But nothing that's made me want to be like, no, I don't want to do this. You know, I mean, like, it's like the best, you know, career, you know, I can imagine. You know, I mean, it's you show up, people fly you around. They're stoked to see you. Everybody's happy you're there. Everybody's, you know, stoked, you know, to hear your music. And at the same time, I understand very well that you do anything long enough, you experience everything it has to offer.
Yeah.
And that will really test, you know, if you want to do it, you know,
mm-hmm.
everybody from the greatest Michael Jordan has went freaking 2 for 50, you know, but did he not want to play basketball because he missed all these shots? You know, I've been on a dance floor where there was nobody on the dance floor. I got on and I packed. I've been at a club where everyone was on the dance floor. I got on and they were like just holding it against the wall, trying to show like, we're not feeling you. But that's just the law of averages.
Yeah.
That's just numbers. You know, eventually you stay around long enough, you'll see, you'll experience the highs and lows. That can't be the definitive reason of why you're doing it. Oh, all the packed shows, I can't be, this is why I do it. You know what I mean? It's got to be more than that, that motivates you to do it. And when it goes your way, you know, you can't let it get to your head too big. Mm-hmm. And when it doesn't go your way, you can't let it defeat you too much. Because you got to hold on to why you really do it.
That mindset. It's a steady mindset.
It's a steady mindset. And it's just, you know, like, it's just being realistic with yourself. You know, what is really why you want to do it? I love this music. I love watching people let go. You know, I love bringing people together on a dance floor. I love, like, playing some music and the people are like, oh my God, this is as good as it gets. Mm-hmm. And I have a 30 more minutes. That's even better than that. And watching them react to that. You know, that's what I love about it. You know, I love mixing. Just being up there playing music that goes together. You know, that's what I really love. You know, crowds going crazy. That makes me feel good. Nobody liking what I what I didn't like my set. That doesn't make me feel good. But that's not why I'm there.
So this is bigger than money.
Oh, way bigger than money. Yeah. I mean, like, I want to be successful, but my goals of success aren't about money. That's not what drives me. Also, I would have.
Which makes it priceless.
Yeah. And I would have probably quit, you know what I mean? At some point in time, you know, because, you know, I made my fair share of money.
Yeah.
You know, me and Scooter, you know, were very successful for a very long time. And, you know, the money was there. So it's like if I would just cared about the money and that's why I did it. Yeah. I don't think I could be doing this as long as I am doing it and still be as passionate, if not more, as I was when I first started.
Yeah. I can see the passion.
I love it. I'm so fortunate. I mean, yeah. Like, you got to do something. You got to wake up and you got to do something. You got to be part of something. And what I wake up to be a part of and what I do is I'm on bending knees every day. This is the thing that I do.
That is absolutely fantastic. So let me ask you, what do you think a successful creative is?
Successful creative?
What does that mean to you?
I mean, to me, successful creative is like someone that like is doing something that they really care about, right? And are they creating something that really care about? And they have the freedom to do it as much as they want. Like, I don't think just because, like, you're not making $100,000 a year that you're not successful. You know, if you're making 60, 40, whatever, and it pays your bills and you can still do this, that you're successful. Because, like, literally, yeah, you're not, there's people making more money than you, but there's so many more people that are making more money that are not even half as happy, aren't as half as self, like, you know, invested. You know, they got to take a break from themselves, go do this job, and then come back to themselves. Your whole time, you're just growing as a soul, as a person, because this is what you love. So it's just self-awareness constantly happening.
Right.
So that to me is success.
Successful creatives. I love that term because in our EDM world, success can simply be being happy, making people happy with your music, and having a creative outlet and fun way to do it. I think that is why I'm so happy to produce this podcast, to be honest. It's Naughty Natalia, and that was our exclusive interview with Groove Crew's resident and legend, Lavelle Dupree. Now, you can grab exclusive content and info about the people we interview by signing up to be part of our community online right now at mmofadj.com. And if you have any feedback from this or any other episode of this podcast, I want to hear from you. Now, many thanks goes out to Lavelle for sharing his personal story. And, you know, not many people really do get to hear this side of him. So I'm beyond honored to be able to provide that platform to do it. Now, since Mastermind of a DJ is an alliance with Vixen's Cabaret and Groove Cruise, the lineup of interviews from some of the biggest names in dance music is massive, and I'm producing them as quickly as I can. So I want to make sure you turn on your automatic downloads for our show on your podcast platforms, just like that you don't miss any of them. Now, the month of November promises to be filled with sweet EDM events that you won't want to miss at Vixen's Cabaret, like DJ Laz on November 24th and Damaged Goods returning to rule the decks on November 26th. You can call them for table reservations now at 954-649-5795. Alrighty, fam, thank you so much for listening, and I ask that you please be good to yourself and others, and we'll catch you next week with my exclusive interview with that bar and restaurateur, and quite frankly, what I'd like to call the mayor of Fort Lauderdale. Well, he's not actually the mayor, but he really could be one. It's Alex Pasakos. We'll see you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to the Mastermind of a DJ podcast with Naughty Natalia. Follow us on our social media handles at Mastermind of a DJ or log online at mmofadj.com. Get into the minds.